Chapter 23. Eyes of Dust. No practical. Guilty. Biaki's eyes were fixed on Promus's back as they forged a path through the whites. Others called them demons, but the warriors of the rout knew their true name. The creatures gibbered with corpse laughter and hooting bellows, their flesh a vile blend of rubber and glossy meat. Winter's fire blazed along the length of his frost blade, and he clove the whites with every swing. Rackwolf fought to his left, his great barbed spear bursting the monstrous beasts like fleshy sacks of multicoloured blood. Olgier Widdowson sang the old sagas of Fenris, swinging his sword as though the Wolf King himself were watching. Every blow was an act of vengeance, and every stride took them closer to where the demon host drew power from the floating idol of the Crimson King. Lightning slammed down 5 paces to his left and exploded in a blinding detonation of unnatural flesh. After images danced behind Biaki's eyes, leering faces and twisted grins flashed in his mind. He blinked away the lingering traces of the images as a beast with flesh of raw pink meat threw itself at him. Its hooked fingers were like spider's legs clawing for his face. A pulse of thought sent the blazing ice of Fenris through its body, and it exploded in a spray of azure flesh scraps. 100 more bounded into the fight, idiot laughter spraying from their gaping, fang-toothed maws as they trampled one another in their hunger to attack. Biaki's hunter's eyes spotted an immediate danger.
"Nagasena!"
he yelled, as a pair of the blue-skinned demons hurled themselves at the mortal swordsman. Nagasena spun low, his sword flashing in a vertical cut. He disemboweled one as it flew over him. The second smashed him to the ground as Biaki had known it would. It reared up, jaws spread wide enough to bite Nagasena's skull clean from his shoulders. Widdowson slammed a booted foot into the creature's flank. It detonated in a welter of variegated ichor. Widdowson scooped Nagasena up and put him back on his feet without breaking his stride. Nagasena nodded his thanks, too winded to speak.
"Keep up!" snapped Widdowson.
Diopromus blazed with psychic light as he bludgeoned a path through the monstrous host. Lightning hurled from above slammed down in blitzing spears around him, misting the air with burning demon flesh. His fists were ablaze with light as he crushed the demons before him. Biaki studied the warrior of Ultramar as he fought, a superb fighter, alloying fury and discipline in perfect balance. The cold logic of Macragge wedded to the violence inherent in the legions. Regret touched Biaki, but he pushed it aside. Service to the Allfather allowed for no sentimentality. Biaki ducked as a pack of whip-bodied creatures formed of slick flesh and raw meat vomited gouts of fire from a host of screaming orifices. Biaki's hood flared with light, and the flames guttered a meter from his body. He threw himself at the flaming beasts, striking left and right to utterly eviscerate them. Glittering immaterial fire licked over his armor at their deaths. They screamed as he slew them, a sound like a burning ice rigger being drawn down into the ocean.
"Do we have a plan?"
said Widdowson, his armor spattered in the oily, iridescent blood of their foes.
"Aye,"
said Biaki, wrenching his blade from a disintegrating corpse.
"But you will not like it." "Do we get to live by the end of it?"
asked Rackwolf, sweeping his fearsome spear around in a killing arc. The demons knew to be wary of it, but cackled with glee each time it claimed one of their fellows. Biaki looked towards the embattled Diopromus as he fought the demons like the avenging sun himself.
"Not all of us."
"Step away, Ahriman," said Tolbeck.
Even Sanact, loyal Sanact, looked at him with fear.
"I have fallen far when even my brothers view me with horror."
"This is the price of our father's life,"
he said, raising his staff.
"There is no other way."
"Whatever it has promised you is a lie," said Tolbeck. "You know this, Azek. You can trust nothing it says."
"I do not, but it has power. And now more than ever, I need that power."
Ahriman swept his gaze over his brothers. Each of them was powerful in his own way. So what quality was it that had made Aphogomon choose one over the other? He could not know, and approached Hathor Mart, whose head was bowed over his chest, his breathing coming in spasming hikes.
"Hathomart," he said.
The legionary lifted his head, and Ahriman's resolve almost crumbled in the face of the naked terror he saw in his brother's face. Pale and clammy, his muscles squirmed beneath skin that blistered with subcutaneous growths.
"Help me!"
Tolbeck took a step towards him, and Ahriman felt the Pyrrhi adept's mind move into a combative stance. Sanek's blades slid a handspan from their sheaths.
"Hazek, don't," said the swordsman. "He is one of us." "Not for long," said Ahriman. "The flesh changes upon him. His life is at an end. It will be a mercy to end his suffering."
"Then let me end him cleanly," said Sanek,
his blades of black and white singing from their scabbards.
"Let him die with honor as a legionary of the Thousand Suns, not as an offering to this thing."
"No,"
said Ahriman, knowing what must come next. Sanakt lunged for him, and Tolbeck let fire ignite around his fists. Ahriman let slip the bindings around his staff and allowed a measure of the Crimson King's power to flow into his flesh. It came in a torrent, like lignite, through his veins. The effect was instantaneous. Ahriman clenched his fist, and the fire within Tolbeck was extinguished utterly. Tolbeck staggered, as though some vital element had been sapped from him. He collapsed, and the breath from his opened mouth was freighted with the chill of the grave. Sanakt's blade twisted aside, and Ahriman felt the swordsman's frustration at his rebellious muscles. Ahriman sent another jolt of power through Sanakt's body, jerking him like a demented marionette.
"I'm sorry, brothers," said Ahriman.
Afogomon somehow forced itself to its feet, the once pristine body it had possessed, now little more than ash held together by will and desire.
"Do it, Hazek,"
it wheezed.
"It has to be now."
Ahriman spun on his heel and slammed the butt of his hecastaff against the last remaining gleam of the Invocatus symbol upon the yokai's skull. He screamed as he struck, the blow weighted with desperation, guilt, and regret. The thing's head came apart in a detonation of softened ceramite fragments. The body dropped straight down, coming apart in a mist of sodden ash. A shadowed afterimage bloomed from the wreckage of its form, a revenant of dark light, coiled, impossibly dense within its artificial shell.
"Throne, forgive me!" yelled Ahriman. "Take him!"
The shadowed umbra swooped on Hathomart and pushed itself inside him like a cloud of microscopic fireflies invading his every pore. Hathomart's body jerked upright, lifted into the air by the inhuman force filling him, his mouth stretched wide, the plates of his battle armor shattering as the body within swelled to unimaginable proportions. A piercing screech, like a thousand murders of crows, issued from Hathomart's mouth as it ripped across his face, tearing the skin and muscle wide open. His skull split apart, and a mist of blood swirled as the two portions writhed and swelled, darkening from pallid bone to a vivid blue.
"What have you done?"
cried Sanakt, as warplight blazed from Hathomart's contorting form. The Pavoni bent over as the muscles on his back expanded to monstrous proportions, and a pair of feathered wings erupted from his flesh in a spray of blood and gristle. His form continued to expand, the legs cracking and splintering as they reshaped into reverse-jointed horrors of feather and claw. The amorphous, gory masses of his skull elongated and twisted like birthing snakes as they transformed into two serpentine necks topped with bulbous growths that undulated like birth sacs. The sacs ruptured, and two avian heads, ebon-beaked and filled with secret malice, were born. They screeched with a wail that split reality and made every demon within the chamber fall to the ground in adulation at this great lord of the pantheon arisen within their midst. The demon towered over Ahriman, a bipedal creature with wide pinions of rippling azure. Its twin heads slid through the air, one fixing Ahriman with its piercing eyes of dead white, the other spouting a litany of nonsense doggerel of veiled meaning.
"You seek power, Hazek Ahriman,"
it said,
"and you shall have it."
There was no practical for this. No training on Ultramar had prepared Promus for a battle such as he faced now. He waded through the host of foes, striking all around him and using his powers like never before. The fire of Macragg that poured from his gauntlets burned all it touched, scorching the beasts to guttering pools of waxen residue. They split and reformed, sullen and grim-eyed, where once they had chittered with inhuman laughter as they clawed his armor. He fired his bolter one-handed, impossible to miss in the sea of nightmarish creatures. Lightning flickered around him, battering the ground with explosive detonations. Promus looked up at the colossus floating overhead. Its form was unraveling, drawn out in smoky trails by the thing inhabiting Lemuel Gaumon. Not much longer until he was in range. More lightning slashed around him, a blitzing storm of raw power. The ground buckled, throwing up great chunks of protean stone and dust. Promus forged through it all, leaping great chasms as they ripped across the ground. He had no idea if Biarki or any of the others were still with him. All his attention was focused forwards, killing and moving, moving and killing. He maglocked his bolter to his thigh, saving his last shells, and took a two-handed grip on his blade. His steps were slowing, the mass of bodies growing too thick for him to easily sweep aside. He lost track of time, his world shrinking to his immediate sphere of combat, the swing of the blade, a crack of a fist, the piston blow of a kick. He lost count of the demons he killed, no longer capable of discerning any difference between them. The press of bodies all around him was growing ever stronger, scores of rubber-fleshed horrors clambering over him in search of his eyes with chisel-nailed fingertips. Promus roared and took a knee, his sword planted before him. He shouted the name of Gilliman, and a corona of blue fire exploded from the blade. Demons burned to cinders, and he rose to his feet as the tsunami of destruction rolled outwards. He strode through the charred remains of the demons. His steps were labored now, his body racked by the toll of wielding such power, but he was where he needed to be. Promus looked up through blurred sight. The Colossus of Magnus was nearly gone, its substance all but unraveled. Lemuel's flesh was practically transparent, the stolen power burning him alive from within. Promus unsnapped his bolter from his thigh and took aim, centering the sights over the back of Lemuel's skull. The man's body hung steadily in the air, rippling with power. An easy shot. "Theoretical. You die, and Magnus dies with you," he said. Promus poured power into the bolts, feeling the cold hardness of the metal, the chemical mix of propellant and explosives, imbuing them with every hexagrammatic ward he knew. "Practical. Don't miss." Promus squeezed the trigger three times in quick succession. He saw the warded bolts fly as true as if he'd fired them on a clear day at the firing range. One for the head, two for the chest. All three bolts burned to ash moments before impact. Lemuel turned his gaze towards Promus, and his eyes lit up with spiteful amusement as he saw the battle raging below, as if he were only now aware of the chaos he had unleashed. Lemuel laughed, and the cruelty Promus heard was terrifying. The Remembrancer slashed his hand downwards, and a searing lance of fire flew at Promus. It struck him in the gap between his gorget and shoulder guard, punching down through his ribcage. It vaporized the bone shield over his ribs, and flash-burned his primary heart to ash. One lung detonated within his chest as the air it contained expanded with explosive force. Promus's sword blade shattered into a storm of fragments, and razor-edged shards sliced across his face. The fire punched down through the meat and muscle of his pelvis to shatter every bone between his hip and ankle, before exploding outwards and blowing out the lower half of his left shin. The pain was excruciating. Promus collapsed to the ground, fighting for air and feeling a jagged hand clamp over his chest as his secondary heart registered the destruction of the primary organ. He tried to blink away the bright lights fogging his vision as his armor flooded his system with pain balms. Promus tried to move his arms, but his body would not obey him, his nervous system paralyzed by shock. The demons shrieked with hateful laughter, bounding in to rend their suddenly disabled foe limb from limb. He gasped in pain, his chest heaving with the hammer blow of his secondary heart kicking in. The dormant lung sac behind his main organs inflated, and Promus sucked in a desperate draft of air. He lifted his bolter and pulled the trigger. The hammer slammed down on an empty chamber.
Damn,
he choked, turning the weapon around to use as a bludgeon. The first of the demons leapt for him, jaws wide and hooked arms outstretched. He clubbed it away, but more came in a rushing tide of claws and teeth. Another flew at him, and Promus was too weak to stop it. A brilliant silver steel blade struck the demon from the air with a perfect strike of razored metal. Aeotian. And then Nagasena was there, standing over him with the dragon sword held overhead in a classic challenge stance.
You will not touch him,
Nagasena promised the demons. The sea of demons parted before Ahriman and the towering creature Aphegomon had become. They dropped back in adulation, falling upon their knees and howling their blind idiot devotion to the mighty creature. One head darted back and forth, spouting an insane chatter of meaningless gibberish, its beak snapping open and shut as though trying to bite back its words. Ahriman's Hecastaff vibrated with the power flowing to the surface. He tasted metal at the nearness of his genesire, a power that had kept itself dormant since leaving the past of old Earth.
You have the power to draw Magnus from Lemuel? He asked.
No,
said Aphegomon.
But you will.
What does that mean?
You will find out.
The storms overhead raged with ever greater power, a swirling maelstrom of colours undreamed, a mirror of the great eye that seethed in the darkest arm of the galaxy. Power boiled in its depths, and its allure promised a time of endless invention, where stasis was anathema. The vast figure of Magnus was little more than a memory of shadow, the faintest outline of something once magnificent. Lemuel floated at the eye of the storm, his stretched body taut with power it was never meant to touch, let alone contain. Ahriman's steps carried him up towards his former pupil, as if an invisible staircase lay before him. Once, so blatant a use of his psychic powers would have horrified him, but defiance of gravity was the least of his abilities now. First tens, then hundreds of meters separated him from the ground. Aphegomon's mighty avian wings bore it upwards alongside him, and the higher Ahriman climbed, the more apparent the full extent of what had been conjured here became. The winding paths of the crystal labyrinth stretched beyond the horizon to encircle the world. Who knew how many souls had been ensnared within its psychic web?
My warriors, said Ahriman. Are they alive?
The lunatic head of the creature answered.
Yes, no, none can say. Maybe all dead, almost sadly changed. Will a meeting happen? Oh, yes. The mordant one and the ones you betray. All will know the name of Ahriman.
Speak plainly, beast, said Ahriman.
It cannot, said the other head. The terrible truths contained within the Well of Eternity drove it entirely mad. It speaks truths, but every fragment of wisdom is inextricably woven with bitter falsehoods. It would take 10,000 lifetimes to unweave them.
Then what use are you to me? Said Ahriman.
That depends on what you are willing to embrace.
Ahriman ignored the creature, knowing it could only speak to him in cryptic half-truths. He glanced down and saw the circle of embattled Imperial forces. They fought impossible odds, a handful of warriors at the heart of an unending horde. These were brave warriors and did not deserve such a fate. But then he remembered the sight of the wolves laying waste to Prospero, and any thoughts of regret curdled within his breast. These men had stood in his way, and there could be no forgiveness and no mercy for those who opposed him. Such would be Ahriman's mantra from this moment onwards.
The power within Lemuel is stronger than us.
The voice came from within Ahriman, and despite the warning, a comforting warmth spread through him at his father's presence. The Hecastaff grew hot beneath his grip, its wood and adamantium core vibrating at a pitch almost too subtle to detect.
But it resides in human flesh. Remember that.
Lemuel drifted down towards them, ablaze from head to foot with etheric fire. Ahriman hid his shock at how the Remembrancer had changed. His form was barely human now, stretched taut and thin by the soul shards within him. His bones were visible beneath the flesh, barely connected to one another beneath diminishing layers of fat and muscle. His skin was ravaged by the psychic inferno burning at its heart, flaking away from his skull in ashen particles. Lemuel's gaze turned on Aphegomon.
"One of the Neverborn dregs," he said,
his voice deep and resonant with secret knowledge.
"Tell me, Azek, what name did it give you?"
"Aphegomon."
"Apt enough," conceded Lemuel. "But its true identity is the one who comes at the appointed time."
"That is but one of my names," said Aphegomon.
"It's the only one that matters," said Lemuel,
and a burst of blue fire shot from his hands. Aphegomon screeched as its feathered body caught light, and glittering, oil-sheened fire burned its form. A cage of flame engulfed the demonic creature, and its powerful wings seared in the sorcerous flames. Aphegomon writhed in agony, screeching as it battered the scorching bars of its immaterial cage.
"Well, that's better," said Lemuel. "Now you are as your master wrought you."
Ahriman held out his staff, and Lemuel smiled as he sensed the power held within.
"Ahriman," said Lemuel, "have you come to restore that soul shard to me?"
"You know I have not."
"My son, I..."
"You are not my father,"
said Ahriman.
"Not like this."
"You know better than that," said Lemuel. "I am all your fathers. The vain, egotistical, loving, disparaging, nurturing, and proud fathers. I am all of them, for no one, not mortal nor primarch, is ever the one without the others."
Ahriman nodded.
"Magnus the Red could be all those things, yes, but he was so much more than any one facet. He was the perfect blend of heart and intellect, and if he could sometimes be blinded by his own brilliance, then who am I to hold that against him?"
"Who indeed?" said Lemuel. "For you are your father's son, and your path leads to the same end as his. None will dare gainsay you, and none who voice dissent will be heard."
"If you are truly Magnus, then you will come back with me."
"To that forsaken world in the eye? Why would I do that?"
"You will die if you do not."
Lemuel laughed.
"Is that what you told the shard in your staff?"
"It is the truth."
"No," said Lemuel, "it is not. And if that is what you believe, then your understanding of the great ocean is woefully lacking. I can live forever with the power I have now."
Lemuel held out his hand.
"And with what you can give me, I can see to it that you live forever at my side."
Ahriman held the staff tightly and said,
"I cannot, for the being you would become would not be my father."
"The father you know is dead,"
snapped Lemuel. "Or had you forgotten? He died on Prospero with thousands of your brothers. These times, they call for a Magnus the Red unfettered by notions of conscience and the shackles of duty and responsibility. The wretched being you left behind is a hair's breadth from dissolution, trapped in the prison of his decaying mind and raving in his lunacy. You would have me return to that?" "I think not."
"Then if you will not come willingly, I will drag you back by force," said Ahriman,
thrusting his Hecastar forwards. A searing beam of light blasted towards Lemuel, more focused than any weapon forged by the Mechanicum. The Remembrancer swatted it away and flew at Ahriman with a sneer of contempt. Ahriman threw up a kind shield. Empowered by the soul within his staff, it could have dissipated the energy from an orbital blast. Lemuel smashed it asunder with a single blow. Ahriman flew from the impact, barely retaining his grip on the staff. He soared up and away from the attack he knew must be coming, and barely avoided a flurry of blue spears of killing light. He hurled bolts of flame from his fingertips. Lemuel caught them all and fed the power into his body. He burned with the brightness of a sun, a blazing avatar of a god amongst men. His bones creaked within his flesh, sinews straining.
"You cannot defeat me, Azek,"
said Lemuel. Coruscating flames rippled over the Remembrancer's body, and his veins stood out like pale lightning against his drum-taut flesh. The skin across his chest split in a hairline crack, and star-bright blood shone from within. Lemuel roared in pain, doubling up as he fought to contain the powers raging within him. Ahriman remembered his true father's words. it resides in human flesh. Ahriman flew back through the air, back towards where Aphegomon writhed in etheric captivity. The creature was in agony, every touch of the fiery bars causing it unimaginable pain.
"Give me the power you promised,"
said Ahriman. Aphegomon pressed a clawed hand against the confines of its cage. The fire consumed the flesh on its bones, but millimeter by millimeter, the hand emerged from the flames. Blackened bones were all that remained, but it was enough. Ahriman gripped Aphegomon's hand, and he cried out as a flood of ancient knowledge flowed into him. Too fast to see anything other than infinitesimal fragments, all that had been and all that would ever be rushed through Ahriman. He bucked in its grip, but the demon's skeletal fingers clamped down hard.
"No, Azek,"
said Aphegomon, its voice thundering in his skull.
"You do not demand my gifts and turn away from all I offer."
Power burned through Ahriman, the power of the creatures born to the warp, birthed in blood by the dreams and nightmares of mortals. The moment his father's power had almost destroyed him in the halls of extinction had been but a taster for this moment. But this time he was not alone. His father rose up within him, pouring from the staff and into every fiber of his essence. Ahriman felt himself pressed into the very frontiers of his flesh, as Magnus the Red claimed him, a being of spirit newly returned to flesh. Azek Ahriman could not contain Aphegomon's power and live, but the Crimson King could. Ahriman felt his body swell with the essence of a god. He was no longer in command of his flesh. That duty and honor fell to his Primarch. Magnus waved his hand, and the fiery prison enclosing Aphegomon vanished. The demon was a shadow of its former self, a withered thing of broken wings and scorched flesh, yet its might was undiminished. One head babbled meaningless doggerel.
"The ocean is polluted. A single flaw that draws the things that hunger for blood,"
it screamed.
"So great a work undone for so small a thing as vanity."
Lemuel circled to face him, the shards within him having mastered their pain. His face contorted in rage.
"Even with that thing's help, you are not strong enough."
"Perhaps not," said Magnus, with a beckoning gesture of challenge. "But unlike you, I am not alone." Fire erupted in the air around him, pink and blue and gold, but he was already in motion. Ahriman felt the strength of Aphegomon blend with that of his father, a potent mix of the Primarch's genius and demonic energies. Such awesome power was intoxicating, and Ahriman wondered if such an alloying could ever be fully sundered. Magnus caught the winds of fire and spun them about himself in a cyclone of blinding light. He hurled them back at Lemuel, who bellowed as he dissipated the flames with a shout. Lightning blazed between them, but Magnus deflected every bolt. Ahriman screamed within his own flesh as he felt the repercussive agonies of such great power. Was this what Ammon had suffered when he had borne the Crimson King's soul on the planet of the sorcerers? The three beings circled one another, power flashing between them in blitzing storms of etheric energy. Burning fires, transformative energies, biomantic and malefic curses were unleashed and dissipated in a storm that cracked the world open. Sourceless chittering sounds echoed from the air and sleeping gods sighed. Lemuel hurled his power heedlessly, eager to end this swiftly and draw out the soul shard within Ahriman's body. The strain that was taking was showing. Cracks spread in a glittering web of bleeding light all across Lemuel's flesh.
"How long do you think you can keep this up?"
taunted Aphegomon.
"Long enough to draw what is mine from Azek," said Lemuel.
"Think you so?" said Magnus. "This body is stronger than the feeble flesh that bears you."
"Then I will shed it and take yours,"
roared Lemuel.
"And when it wears thin with use, I will take another. Is that what you would become? A vampire stealing flesh to house your spirit, moving from body to body as the years wear heavy on you? What else is there? Rust destroyed our body. There is union,"
said Magnus, holding out his hand. "Join with me and return to your sons. We will lead them again and forge our own path together." Lemuel sneered.
"Have you seen what awaits on the world of the Nine Suns? You would house us in a withered spirit corpse, trapped for eternity behind an unseeing eye and doomed to live through the actions of others. No, never that."
A torrent of ferocious energy blazed from Lemuel's eyes. It buckled the air between them, but Magnus was no longer there. Instead, Aphegomon bore the brunt of the assault. The demon lord's body writhed in the flames, its twin heads screeching in agony as they burned. Lemuel's gaze swept left and right in search of his foe. Magnus swooped up behind Lemuel and wrapped an arm around the Remembrancer's neck. He plunged his other hand into Lemuel's back, reaching deep within him for what was rightfully his. Lemuel screamed and his back arched in agony. They fell from the sky, twin angels of fire locked in a battle for supremacy of their shared soul. The shards housed in Lemuel's body fought to hold on to the shell that contained them, but it was a fight they could not win. Magnus slammed into the ground, and the impact was the starfall of a celestial being cast from heaven. Dust and rock flew in all directions from the impact. Magnus, clad in Ahriman's flesh, stood over his foe, flesh aflame from the power flowing into him. Blinding light rose from Lemuel's groaning body, a coruscating pyre of pellucid crimson fire, the very essence of Magnus's restored soul. He threw back his head and devoured the fire as it lifted him into the air. The storm raging overhead exploded outwards, and without its creator's will holding the dark necropolis of Tisca together, it began to collapse. Blades of glass and blinding veils of dust fell in a glittering, choking rain. Magnus laughed to feel the power of his reunited soul once again. Not yet complete, but whole enough for him to taste what he had once been and could be again when his final soul shard was restored to him. Ahriman felt his father's fleeting temptation to keep his body for himself, to push his son out completely and live again in a new body of flesh. "No," said Magnus. "Never that." He turned as Aphegomon landed behind him, the great demon's frame bowed and hunched by the terrible hurts done to it. Magnus was not fooled. He knew the demon could restore itself in time. "Is this what you wanted?" asked Magnus.
"This was never about what I wanted," replied Aphegomon, its voice hollow with pain.
"Then what was it about?"
"About what your son was willing to sacrifice to save you."
"Too much," said Magnus softly, as he took in the destruction of the reflected Tisca and all that had befallen Ahriman's warriors since embarking upon their quest. "I feel all that he has done, all he has seen and learned. It will be a pain in his heart for the rest of his life."
"It will be his undoing,"
promised Aphegomon.
"Perhaps it will," replied Ahriman,
as Magnus relinquished control of his body, and his father's power receded once more into his hecastaff.
"But not today."
He looked up to see a city's worth of debris falling from above, the unbound ruins of Lemuel's grand stage. Tens of thousands of tons of glass and rock that would crush anything left alive to dust. Ahriman reached out with his mind, extending his will to touch the souls he had brought to this world, as well as each artifact of significance to the Thousand Suns. Just as his father had done in Prospero's last moments, he opened his mind and gave newfound power to them all.
"Time to go home," he said,
and blinked. The necropolis of Tisca fell with the sound of the world's ending, an avalanche of broken glass and stone that had only recently been raised. Lemuel watched it fall with an aching sense of finality from the crater in which he and Magnus had landed. He welcomed the rain of death. His body was an inferno of scars worn on the inside of his flesh and bones. He couldn't move, but perhaps that was for the best. Soon there would be no uncertainty. No more pain and no more despair. He hoped he would meet Malika again. Would she forgive him for all he had done? Of course she would. Malika had the biggest heart he had known. She would welcome him with open arms, and they would spend eternity in whatever awaited him in the dreaming moments beyond his death.
"I am coming, my love,"
he said, closing his eyes at the last instant before the debris crashed down. The noise was deafening, a rising crescendo that went on and on until it seemed it would never end. Lemuel felt the ground heave at the terrifying impacts all around him. It seemed as though Nykea were trying to shake him loose, but nothing of Tiska's destruction touched Lemuel. He opened his eyes and saw the crashing thunder of debris slamming down against a rippling barrier of psychic force. Lemuel watched as boulders the size of legion tanks and shards of glass like vast guillotine blades shattered against the barrier. Everything ricocheted from it, falling away in a never-ending tide until, after what felt like an eternity, the roaring stopped and the seismic force of collapse was stilled.
What?
He murmured.
How?
Shapes moved in his peripheral vision, bloodied, battered, and grunting with effort and pain. He heard their voices, guttural barks and growls. He heard women speaking, but could not make out anything through their tears. Though the effort drew a gasp of agony from the depths of his abused body, Lemuel forced himself upright. His flesh felt bruised all the way down to his bones, and they, in turn, were filled with broken glass.
Fenris Yolda! You are right, Rune Priest,
said a wet, malformed growl behind him.
He's alive! I would have bet my spear he would be dead.
Lemuel tried to turn, but a rough hand seized him by the scruff of his neck. Something bright flashed, and a sharp blade pricked the skin at his neck.
Then we finish the job,
said the owner of the blade. He recognized the voice. Olgir Widdowson.
No,
said Bjarki's voice, exhausted beyond endurance by the cost of keeping the cascade of debris from obliterating them all.
Release him. It is not his weird to die here, though I wish it were.
Lemuel opened his mouth to speak, but Widdowson leaned over his shoulder and shook his head. The wolf's face was streaked with blood and burns.
You get to live, but you don't speak, demon host,
he said, pushing Lemuel over onto his stomach. Lemuel screamed in pain and rolled onto his back, searching for any sign of a friendly face, but finding none. The three wolves stood implacable and unbowed, while Diopromus lay bloodied on his back, his armor molten and part fused to his ruined flesh. A waxen seal bearing a fragment of burnt oath paper fluttered at his pauldrons. That Promus still lived was a miracle, but Lemuel had seen legionaries suffer the most grievous of hurts and endure. The swordsman, Nagasena, lay unconscious at the edge of the crater, still gripping a gleaming sword tightly, despite the terrible burns on his arms. Camille and Chaya did their best to tend to his injuries, and Lemuel's heart soared to see them reunited. He raised a hand towards them. Chaya whispered in Camille's ear, and his former colleague looked over. Any thoughts of rekindled friendship were stilled by her look of utter hatred. Lemuel looked away as Bodvar Bjarki knelt before him. The wolf reached out, and Lemuel flinched, expecting pain, but Bjarki simply placed a hand over his heart. He felt the chill touch of Fenris spread through him, and the rune priest shook his head in wonderment.
This mortal is no demon host. Not anymore, said Bjarki. The soul of the Crimson King is gone, and no other fiend will ever claim his flesh. This one is a weird wraith now, forever illuminated from within against the darkness of the creatures of the underverse.
Bjarki rose and approached Promus, saying,
Can you stand?
Stand? Why?
Said the former ultramarine, with a voice utterly traumatized by pain.
Because you'll need to look me in the eye when you answer my next question.
Promus nodded slowly, and Lemuel winced at the agony he saw in the warrior's face as he used his shattered bolter to push himself upright. The lower portion of his right leg was missing, and he fell back with a grunt. Bjarki nodded to Widdowson, who bent to assist the struggling warrior to his feet. Promus nodded his thanks as the wolf helped him upright.
What is your question?
Asked Promus, meeting Biarki's cold and flinty gaze.
Is it true?
Is what true?
That you are a murderer of our kind,
said Bjarki.
That you have taken the lives of brother legionaries loyal to the Allfather.
What are you talking about?
Asked Promus.
Do not lie to me,
said Bjarki, stepping in close to Promus, and though the wounded warrior was half a head taller, Lemuel saw he was the lesser of the two.
The creature with the red sorceress,
said Bjarki, placing a hand over Promus's heart.
It told us what you have done.
It smelt the guilt of murder upon you.
Promus sneered.
A creature of the warp? You cannot trust anything such a creature might say.
Yeah, normally I would agree with you. But the best liars are those who hide their lies among the truth, and you have been lying to me since we met, Dio Promus. So tell me truthfully, what exactly is it you do for Malkador?
Biarki tapped the shredded length of oath paper fixed to his armor with wax imprinted with a sigillite seal.
I know what we do for him, but I have to know what calling would be so great that a warrior of Ultramar would forsake the colors of his legion.
A calling you would never understand.
Ah, yes, because I am just a savage from a death world.
No, because your loyalty to your genesire would never permit you to do what I must.
Biarki almost laughed, but caught himself with a grimace of anger.
You have no idea what the Sixth Legion can do. Did Prospero teach you nothing?
It taught me more than you know.
Then tell me, if what the creature said is true. And remember, I will know if you lie.
Promus met Biarki's gaze, and Lemuel saw Promus's realization of the truth in the rune priest's words. A lie would be unraveled in the space between heartbeats.
It is true, said Promus.
I have taken the lives of brother legionaries loyal to the Emperor. The horror of the answer drove the breath from Lemuel's chest. Even Biarki, who had expected this answer, seemed shocked. The only response the wolf could muster was a single question.
Why?
I will not say, said Promus.
Why not?
Because I swore an oath to never reveal my duty, said Promus with a burdened heart.
An oath more binding than that I took before Lord Gilliman in the Praetorium of Macragge. One I cannot now break, even in the face of my executors. Biarki said nothing. His head hung low over his chest, and Lemuel saw he was weighing the consequences of what Promus had confessed.
I am a loyal servant of Terra, said Promus. That is all I can tell you.
Biarki gave a nod to Svavnir Rackwolf and said,
No, it is not enough. Do you remember you once asked if I was to stand at your side and slay you if you turned traitor?
Promus nodded.
On committee, Sona.
Yeah, said Biarki. I told you that we did not relish such tasks, but the Wolf King commanded us, so we obeyed.
Promus opened his mouth to reply, but before he could speak, Svavnir Rackwolf rammed his spear through him. The barbed adamantium blade severed his spine and clove his soul-functioning heart. Rackwolf twisted the haft of his weapon and pushed it deeper until its barbed tip burst from the center of Promus's chest. Biarki kept his eyes locked with Promus's, and Lemuel felt something indefinable pass between them. Rackwolf wrenched his spear free of the former ultramarine, and Promus fell forwards with a crash of armor. Lemuel climbed to his feet and limped towards Biarki. The rune priest turned as he approached.
You think I was wrong?
No, said Lemuel.
I think I should kill you too, just to be sure.
You aren't going to do that.
No,
agreed Biarki.
Do you know why?
Biarki shrugged.
Weird is strange like that. Some who die are not meant to follow their path to the end. Others who have done much to deserve to die endure.
The wolf lowered himself to the ground and sat back on his haunches, letting the exhaustion of the battle seep out of him in waves.
We failed, he said, in every way possible. The red sorcerers will restore their father, and he will rise more powerful than ever before.
Lemuel shook his head and bent to pull the tattered oath seal from Promus's armor.
No, he will be less.
How so?
I had the soul of the Crimson King within me,
said Lemuel.
I touched his thoughts and his fears. There is a piece of his soul he cannot yet reclaim. The very best part, I think.
Without it, he will have all the power of Magnus the Red, but without the good that once lay within him.
Bjarki stood.
You know this for certain?
I do, said Lemuel. Then our mission is not yet done, said Bjarki.
Lemuel turned the oath paper he had taken from the dead warrior before him and read the scorched remnants of his name and deeds.
He was once an honorable man, he said, and I shall honor him.
Bjarki gripped his arm.
You will return with us to Terra. The Sigilite must hear what you know, Lemuel.
He shook his head.
That is no longer my name, he said.
He folded the oath paper and gripped it tight in his palm.
Call me Promius.
Ahriman blinked. Escaping Prospero's doom to the planet of the sorcerers had been an agonizing fall through a maelstrom of howling madness, but the translation from Nykaea was like waking from sleep. The grand stage of Tizca's dark mirror, conjured by Lemuel, was gone, but a storm yet raged around him. Ahriman let out an ether-hot breath and saw he stood in the last remains of a broken city of cyclopean menhirs and towering megaliths, a place that reeked of blood and death. Tolbeck and Sanact looked around in wonderment at their new surroundings. Menkaura was with them once more, the seer down on his knees, clutching his head and weeping blood from his ruined eye sockets. Ignis stood over the fallen body of an orange lacquered cybernetic, nodding as if he had foreseen this exact circumstance. The warbands lost in the labyrinth were also returned with Ahriman, and he saw Onuris Hex, as well as Caillou and the others. Their auras were all but extinguished, and Ahriman wondered what dark corners of their souls had been bared within the labyrinth. But such mysteries would have to wait, for he had brought them all from one world's ruin to another. The thousand suns they had left behind stood at the perimeter of a circle of hard-packed earth, enclosed by the ring of vast stones. Power billowed around them as they held back a world-ending tempest of oblivion with barriers of overlapping kind shields. None turned to acknowledge their arrival, every scrap of their attention focused on defying the oncoming Armageddon. Ahriman's breath caught in his throat as he saw what had become of his Primarch in his absence.
We were too late, he whispered,
and the words glittered on his breath before falling like dust from his lips. The corpse of Magnus the Red sat locked within a throne fashioned from interleaved vines of gold. Amon knelt before his genesire, swathed in rags and clad in armor patched with rust and antiquity. Ahriman moved towards the withered corpse of Magnus, but Tolbeck stepped in front of him and placed a burning fist at the center of his breastplate.
You gave one of our own to a demon,
said the Pyrrhi adept, his eyes eager for violence. I will not forget that,
and neither will our brothers. I did what had to be done,
snapped Ahriman, feeling the forces within his Hecastaff pulling him onwards.
And I would do it again. Now get out of my way.
Tolbeck held his arm a moment longer before releasing him.
When the War Master's campaign is won, there will be a reckoning between us, Azek Ahriman,
promised Tolbeck.
So be it. Now move. I need to save our father.
Tolbeck stepped aside, and Ahriman jogged towards the support throne and the slumped form of the Primarch. Sanact appeared at his side, and Ahriman shook his head.
You too, Sanact, he said.
Are you going to threaten me as well?
No, said the swordsman. You had an impossible choice to make. Betray your brother or save your father. I could not have made that choice. But that is not what troubles me.
Ahriman sensed evasion in Sanact's words and said,
Then what does? The ease with which you made it, said Sanact. I wonder who else you might sacrifice to obtain what you want if the prize is great enough. Menkaura? Ignis? Me?
Ahriman did not answer and slowed his pace as they approached their father's golden tomb. Amon looked up, and Ahriman tried to hide his shock as he saw the equerry's ravaged features. Ahriman had little idea of how long their quest had taken, but from the look of Amon, centuries must have passed. His features were like weathered oak, both eyes unseeing with opaque cataracts. Despair touched Araman. Were they already too late? Was the War Master's rebellion already over? Had Terra fallen, or were the armies of Horus shattered in defeat, licking their wounds in some backwater system?
Araman, is that really you?
Said Amon, his voice little more than a parched desert whisper.
It is I, brother, he said,
as Sanact knelt to help the blinded Amon to his feet. The equerry's face contorted in pain, and Araman remembered the terrible damage the demon of dust in the guise of the Wolf King had wrought upon him. Amon reached up and touched Araman's face, as if unwilling to yet believe he was real. He wept as his fingers made contact with a being of flesh and blood, and not false hope.
I never dreamed you would return, brother, said Amon. I am here, replied Araman. Did you?
Araman held up his Hecastaff, and the milky cataracts bled from Amon's eyes as the power of the Crimson King's soul radiated from the pale wood. Amon blinked, and his eyes widened as he saw for the first time in who knew how long.
Brother!
He cried, and took Araman's hand in the warrior's grip, wrist to wrist.
You are a wonder to me.
And you to me,
said Araman, looking up at the husked body of their father.
I will hear of all that has happened in due time. But first,
I,
said Amon, turning and guiding Araman towards the throne. From a distance, his father's condition had been terrible to behold, but up close the horror was even greater. Like a mummified body, the Crimson King was a revenant of ossified flesh, drained of all vitality. His once mighty body was shrunken and black, as though decaying from the inside out.
Are we too late?
Asked Sanact, echoing Araman's earlier thought.
Is he already dead?
No, said Araman. He yet lives. I'm sure of it.
Araman rose into the fifth enumeration and pushed his mind down into the leather-tough flesh of his father's body. His outer skin was withered and long dead, like the surface of an ancient and petrified tree. Deeper he plunged, past necrotic and lifeless organs he could not identify, seeing highways of blood vessels and networks of sensory pathways beyond anything he could have imagined. The craft of the Emperor's gene rites was masterful to behold. But he had no time to spend admiring their work. Onwards he dived, sensing a pulse of life deep within the shell of his father, an ember on the verge of extinguishing.
Araman.
The pulse of thought was so faint, Araman wasn't sure he had even heard it at first. He paused in his psychic voyage through his father's body and waited for the voice to come again.
Araman. Yes, father. Am I dead? No. I think I was dying, yes. You were, but I am here now. Where did you go? To bring back your soul. My soul? Yes, said Araman,
and allowed the soul shards bound within his staff to flow outwards. They surged from within, roaring like a flood tide as they used him as a conduit. Like attracts like. Araman screamed as the combined aspects of the Crimson King poured through him to where they belonged. The power was immense, and Araman felt himself being pulled apart from within as they bloated his fragile psyche. For an instant, he almost felt pity for Lemuel, a mere mortal whose fragile flesh had somehow managed to bear such a burden. As though filling a well, the shards of Magnus's soul spread through his flesh as the most potent of panaceas. What it touched, it renewed, and what it renewed was reborn. Like a great and powerful animal shaking off a long hibernation, the Crimson King shed the dust of ages. Araman felt the last of the power contained within his staff bleed out, and he gasped, pulling his mind back into his skull with a cry of pain. To have flown so close to the heart of a star would leave repercussions like nothing he had ever experienced before. But that was a price he would pay as often as necessary to renew his father. He staggered away from the imprisoning throne as the twisting vines of gold cracked and burned away like dust in the wind. As above, so below. The deathly hue drained from Magnus's skin, and the bronzed ruddy heat of his flesh restored itself. Atrophied muscles swelled with growth, becoming mighty once again. A deep rumble built within the breast of the Crimson King, and armor that was layered with a patina of verdigris and rust shone with the luster of metal freshly forged. His mighty head lifted, and the lank matted hair became lustrous once again, a mane of scarlet banded by a crown of gold. Finally, his eye opened, and Ahriman sank to the ground. Tears fell with unabashed joy at the sight of his father's clear and lucid sight. The pupil swirled with colours undreamed, and, even newly awakened, it saw further and deeper than Ahriman's ever would. Further even, perhaps, than it had before. Magnus rose from the support throne, and it collapsed into broken shards, leaving him standing over them all, a god restored to his towering majesty. The Primarch stood taller now, a being of limitless power, unburdened by any notions of restraint or by weight of conscience. His soul was restored, but Ahriman knew that the best part of it, the true and loyal heart of him, remained lost. Golden light blazed from him, and as it spread across the circle of Menhirs, the storms beyond were stilled, as the great will that had kept oblivion at bay set order upon his kingdom once again. Beyond the titanic stones, the world was remaking itself, its protean form given shape by the desires of the Crimson King. The Thousand Suns turned from their labours, drained but elated to see their father once again, brighter, stronger, and more energised than ever before. They gathered in their hundreds to witness their father's rebirth, and Ahriman could only guess at how long it had been since they had seen him like this. Their steps were leaden, and he felt their exhaustion. They marched like captives newly freed from a lifetime of incarceration, or mindless automata cut from their command cortex. Their souls had been pushed to the edge of despair, but with every step they took towards Magnus, more remembered his light and awoke. Hundreds of warriors surrounded Ahriman and his cabal, pressing their gauntlets against the battered plates of their armour, like pilgrims confronted by a saint or holy object.
"Ahriman," said Magnus.
And every one of the Thousand Suns turned to the source of their Genesire's voice. Ahriman stood as though drawn to his feet by a puppeteer's hand, and his brother legionaries parted before him. He and the warriors who had set out to restore the Crimson King marched through the newly created path towards him with their heads held high. He reached Magnus and saw the mighty grimoire he had carried from this world was once again chained to his Primarch's hip. He had no memory of taking the book to the surface of Nykaea, but here it was, restored to his father. Ahriman fell to one knee and bowed his head.
"No," said Magnus. "My sons, from this moment onwards, you will never kneel to me."
Ahriman rose and looked up into his father's face.
"You saved me," said Magnus, "all of you, and that is a debt I can never repay. Your faith and courage humbles me, but I must beg yet more of you."
"Ask," cried Ahriman. "We are yours to command.
The tides of the great ocean have revealed our course, the path we must take," said Magnus, his voice carrying to every warrior gathered before him. "Horus gathers his forces for a final push on the solar system, and we will join him for the last great battle on Terra's soil."
Long had Ahriman waited to hear the Primarch speak of what the future held for the Legion. But Terra, the Birthrock.
"We will gather the vessels of our fleet and make all speed to rendezvous with the Warmaster. The hour is upon us where the Thousand Suns must join this fight, a war we wished no part in, and bring ruin upon those who have sought to humble us."
Cheers spread through the assembled warriors, but Magnus was not yet done.
"Make no mistake, my sons," he continued. "The coming days will test us all. But cleave to this when the darkness presses in and hope grows scarce. I do not fight for Horus, nor any of my fallen brothers. I do not fight for the primordial forces that would claim dominion over this galaxy. No,
I fight to save the hope of a brighter future, the dream that began life when the first expeditionary fleets set sail upon the great ocean. Magnus drew his golden kopesh and raised it high. I fight with Horus only until we break open my father's palace. And when its gates are sundered and its vaults forced, I will reclaim the first and greatest shard of my soul held prisoner beneath it. The nine suns caught the gleaming edge of the blade and threw out nine reflections of the Primarch's all-seeing eye. Ahriman cheered himself hoarse to see his father so sure in his conviction, so vital and singular in his purpose. Magnus reborn, the Crimson King crowned in fire.